soloists were Ricarda Merbet, Juliana Banzer and Anna Lucia Richter. The contralto was Sara Mingardo and the mezzo was Mihoko Fujimura. The tenor was Andreas Schager, the baritone was Peter Matei and the bass baritone was Samuel Jun. The Bavarian Radio Chorus, the Latvian Radio Chorus, the Tölz Boys Choir and the Lucerne Festival Orchestra were all conducted by Ricardo Schai. I'm Ian Skelly. It's been my pleasure to bring you that particular concert in my regular roundup of European music making. There's no edition next week of my programme because we'll be very much down the river by then with a unique event on Radio 3, a flowing river of music. 12 hours of music, no presentation at all, 70 pieces from 10 centuries reflecting the 70 years of the BBC Third programme and Radio 3. The river starts flowing at just after 9 o'clock next Sunday morning and it runs all the way through until 9 in the evening. Before then, though, we have a whole week of Radio 3 in concert, which tomorrow comes from Glasgow, where the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra plays music by Bozzoni, and Vile, Kurt Vile's Seven Deadly Sins, written to a libretto by Bertolt Brecht. It's a sung ballet recounting the allegorical adventures of the title character, Anna, as she explores life and all its temptations. Radio 3 in concert, 7:30 tomorrow night, here on Radio 3.
Once a year, the World on 3 team makes a pilgrimage to discover the future stars of world music. Their destination is WOMEX, the World Music Expo, held this year in Santiago de Compostela.
A showcase here, a talk there, hooking up with an artist in between gigs and sound checks. There's always a lot of running around involved. Flat shoes are a must.
What will they find there? No one knows. But the music is sure to be good. Join Lopa Katsari for two special editions of World on 3 from WOMEX, beginning next Friday nights at 11 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3.
It's just a little after 9 o'clock now, and next tonight, Drama on 3, a haunting play by J.M. Barrie, starring Bill Paterson. Written 15 years after Peter Pan, it's about a mysterious island, a ghost and a girl who never grows up. The drama is introduced by Laura Moody, who composed and performed the music for this production. Mary Rose by J.M. Barrie.
Mary Rose feels as if it's driven by J.M. Barrie's obsession with the passage of time. Barrie wrote it soon after the end of the First World War, in which he had lost the young man who had inspired Peter Pan. Its themes of grief and guilt were perfectly in tune with an audience still shocked by the sudden loss of so many. Capturing the play's movement from cosy Victoriana to post-war desolation was a musical starting point for me. So the early pastoral themes linger, but become faded and ragged, more of a torment than a comfort. Like many ghost stories, Mary Rose is essentially about loss. Many of that first audience were fascinated and comforted by the idea of parallel spiritual realms like the one suggested in the play, even if Barrie's version of this idea is characteristically ambiguous. Barrie's enigmatic heroine, Mary Rose, was the next challenge. She appears to be suspended in time, somehow mocked to forever remain a child, play-acting adulthood. This conflict within her is something I've sought to explore in my score. Her music, in fact all the music for this adaptation, is made entirely from just my voice and my cello, often mic'd extremely closely to create an effect that's both intimate and unsettling. To evoke the mysterious island, which you'll hear is so central to this drama, I was very much influenced by the haunting sound of traditional Hebridean psalm singing, a timeless style of congregational singing in which the voices rise and fall like waves. In many ways, the island is a darker counterpoint to Peter Pan's Neverland. Where Neverland is filled with adventure, Mary Rose's island gives us only unanswered questions, while the dead live on in the room next door.
Mary Rose by J.M. Barrie. Let's imagine
A room in a small Sussex manor house that has long been for sale. All of this room's past, which can be taken away, has gone. Such light as there is comes from a window incompletely shrouded in sacking. If a photograph could be taken quickly, we might find a disturbing smile on the room's face, perhaps like the Mona Lisa's, which came surely of her knowing what only the dead should know. There are two doors. One leads downstairs, the other is at the back. It may look insignificant, but it is that door that is at the centre of this disturbing history. A history which, by the way, writer's cramp is forcing me to record with my left hand, my sinister hand. We might play with the disquieting fancy that this room, once warm with love, is still alive, but shrinking from observation. You can hear that, can't you? It's the caretaker. I'll call her Mrs. Ottery. She's not a clumper, though, so there must be someone with her. Her greatest capacity is for sitting still in the dark. Nevertheless, though saving of her candle in other empty houses, she always lights it on the approach of evening in this one.
This was the drawing room.
No, never. This wasn't the drawing room, my lovely. At least, not in my time.
This is the clumper, an Australian soldier, a private such as in those days you met by the dozen in any London street. He's well-built, sinewy, with the clear eye of the man with the axe, whose chief life struggle until the war came was to fell trees and see to it that they did not crash down on him.
I only came about 3 years ago, and I never saw the house furnished. But I was told to say that this was the drawing room.
I remember we called the drawing room the big room. It wasn't a little box like this.
This is the biggest room in the house.
I've shivered in many a shanty in Australia and thought of the big room at home and the warmth of it. And now this is the best it can do for the prodigal when he returns to it. We live and learn.
We live at any rate.
If this was a drawing room, then there'll be an apple tree outside, with one of its branches scraping on the window. I've won. No tree, no drawing room.
I have heard tell there was once a tree there, and you can see the roots if you look down.
Yes, I see it in the long grass, and a bit of the seat that used to be around it. You win. It's the drawing room. There were blue curtains, and I used to hide behind them and pounce out upon Robinson Crusoe. There was a sofa at this end. I had my first swimming lessons on it. There used to be a peacock, too. Now, what the hell could a peacock be doing in this noble apartment?
I have been told a cloth used to hang on the wall there, and that it had pictures of peacocks on it.
Gone. Even my peacock. And I could have sworn I used to pull the feathers out of its tail. The clock was in this corner. Is there any objection, your ladyship, to smoking in the drawing room?
Smoke if you want.
He hacks into a cake of tobacco with a large clasp knife.
That's a fearsome-looking knife.
Useful. In trench warfare. It's not a knife. It's a visiting card. You leave it on favoured parties like this.
Were you an officer?
For a few minutes. Now and again.
You're playing with me.
You're so irresistible.
She wants to lead him downstairs, but that little door at the back has caught his eye.
What does that door open on?
She avoids looking at it.
Nothing. It's just a cupboard door.
Who's playing with me now?
I don't know what you mean. Come this way.
I'll explain what I mean. That door, it's coming back to me. It leads to a little dark passage.
That's all.
That can't be all. It leads, yes, to a single room. And the door of the room faces this way.
Did you feel it? How the room caught its breath?
There's a memory for you. What the hell made you want to deceive me?
It's of no consequence.
I think, yes. The room in there has two stone windows and wooden rafters.
It's the oldest part of the house.
I think I used to sleep in there.
That may be. If you'll come down with me.
I'm curious to see that room first.
But she bars the way.
You can't go in there.
Your reasons?
It's locked. I tell you, it's just an empty room.
There must be a key.
It's lost.
Strange. Your anxiety to stop me when you knew I would find the door locked.
It's never locked. It's held.
Who holds it?
Be quiet.
You're all a-shivering.
I'm not.
I suppose you're just shivering because the room is so chilly.
That's it.
So you are shivering. May I put a light to these bits of sticks?
If you like. My orders are to have fires once a week. You can't have the money to buy a house like this.
Not me. I'm for Australia again. What is wrong with this house?
There's nothing wrong with it.
I've heard that they had to get a caretaker from a distance because no woman hereabout would live alone in this house.
A pack of cowards.
I've heard that that caretaker was a bold and cheerful woman when she came and that now she is a scared woman.
I'm not.
I've heard she's been known to run out into the fields and stay there trembling half the night.
Of course, I see that couldn't have meant you. Just foolish stories that gather about an old house.
That's all?
Cunningly, suddenly, he looked towards the inner door.
What's that? I've got you that time. What was it you expected to see? Is it a ghost? They say it's a ghost.
What is it that gives this house an ill name?
There is no use showing you the rest of the house. If you want to be stepping off, my work to do.
But we've got on so nicely. I wonder if you'd give me a mug of tea. Not a cup, we drink it by the mug for where I come from.
I have no objection.
Since you are so pressing, I accept.
Come down then to the kitchen.
No. I'm sure the prodigal got his tea in the drawing room. But what made them make such a fuss about that man beats me.
She closes the little door and the room sighs.
Until I have your promise,
Edward. Very well, I promise. Unless, of course, she comes peeping out at the handsome gentleman. Your ghost has nothing to do with me. It's a woman, isn't it? See here, I'll sit in this chair till you come back, saying my prayers.
I wouldn't leave that knife lying around.
Oh, come on, give the old girl a chance.
I'll not be more than 10 minutes.
She can't do much in 10 minutes.
At this remark, the old woman fixes him with her eyes, then departs. He is sitting sunk in the chair, staring at the fire. It goes out, but he remains there motionless, and in the increasing dusk, he ceases to be an intruder. He's now part of the room, the part long waited for, come back at last. Watch the door. The little door, for now the crafty work begins. Behind his chair, the door opens slowly to the extent of a foot. Presently, he starts to his feet, convinced that there is someone in the room very near his knife. He is so sure of the exact spot where she is that for a moment he looks nowhere else. Watch. While he retrieves his knife, behind him the door slowly closes. Spinning round, he opens the door and calls out.
Who is that? Is there anyone there?
With some distaste, he enters the passage and tries the inner door, but whether it be locked or held, it will not open. He is about to pocket his knife, then, with a shrug of bravado, sends it quivering back into the wood for her, if she can get it. He returns to the chair, but not to close his eyes, to watch and be watched. The room is in a tremble of desire to get started upon that nightly travail which can never be completed until this man is here to provide the end. In front of his eyes, the room quivers, and 30-odd years are peeled away. It's a serene afternoon. There are rooms that are always smiling, so that you may see them at it if you peep through the keyhole, and Mrs. Morland's little drawing room is one of them. If I was writing with my right hand, it might stay that way. But I'm not. Everything he remembered is here. The blue curtains, the sofa on which he had his first swimming lessons, the peacock on the wall, and the apple tree. It's in full blossom at the open window. One of its branches has even stepped into the room. Mr. Morland and Mr. Amy, the local clergyman, have been chatting importantly about some matter of no importance. I think they share a pleasant habit, competitive print collecting, perhaps. Mrs. Morland has had to keep the peace as usual, but Mr. Amy has departed in good humour.
Oh, James.
I can't resist teasing him. Good old George. It's a pity he has no flair. He might as well order his prints by wireless.
What is that?
Wireless. There's an article about it in that paper. Mm. It says in a few years' time, we'll be able to talk to ships on the ocean.
Oh, nonsense, James.
Yes, of course it's nonsense. Mm. And yet there's no denying, as he says, there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in our philosophy.
Well, you and I know that to be true.
Oh, that. Well, that's all dead and done with long ago.
Yes, but sometimes when I look at Mary Rose, it's so happy.
She will never know anything about it.
No, indeed, but someday she will fall in love.
That little girl, Fanny, let's not seek trouble before it comes.
She can't marry without you telling the man we agreed.
Yes, though I'm not certain I ought to. Sleeping dogs. But no, I'll keep my word. I'll tell him everything.
Poor Mary Rose.
Now then, none of that. Where is she now?
Down at the boathouse with Simon, I think.
Oh, that's all right. Let her play about with Simon and the like. It may make a tomboy out of her, but it will keep young men out of her head.
You still think of Simon as a boy? He's a sub-lieutenant in the Navy.
I still tip him. At least I did a year ago, and he liked it. Thanks no end, he said, and then he slipped behind the screen to see how much it was.
He's a very delightful creature, but he isn't a boy anymore.
I'll go down to the boathouse at once. If this new invention was in working order, Fanny, I could send him packing without even getting up. I should simply say from this sofa, is my little Mary Rose there?
I'm here, Daddy.
Oh, good. Where are you, Mary Rose?
I'm in the apple tree.
What are you doing in the apple tree, hoiding?
I'm hiding.
From Simon?
No, not sure who I'm hiding from. From myself, I think. Oh, Daddy, I'm frightened.
What's frightened you? Simon?
Yes, partly.
If there is anything strange about this girl of 18 who steps from the tree into the room, it is an elusiveness of which she is unaware. It has remained hidden from her friends, although in the after years, in the brief space before they forget her, they will probably say, because of what happened, that there was always something a little odd about Mary Rose. This oddness might be expressed thus, that the happiness and glee of which she is almost overfull know of another attribute that never plays with them.
Mummy.
I don't mean that anything has really frightened you, Mary Rose.
Oh, I'm not sure. Hold me tight, Mummy.
Where is Simon?
He's at the foot of the tree. He's not coming up by the tree. He wants to come in by the door. That shows how important it is.
What is?
You see, his leave is up tomorrow and he wants to see you, Daddy, before he goes.
I'm sure he does, and I know why. I told you, Fanny. Mary Rose, do you see my wallet lying about?
Your wallet, Dad?
Yes, you gosling, there's a fiver in it, and that is what Master Simon wants to see me about.
Oh, Mummy!
Oh, James. Darling, tell me what Simon's been saying to you. Whisper it, my love. Yes, I thought it was that.
I'm frightened to tell Daddy.
James, you may as well be told bluntly. It isn't your fiver Simon wants, it's your daughter.
Oh, Daddy!
You're not in love with Simon, are you?
He's only a boy, Mary Rose, just a very nice boy.
That's the wonderful, wonderful thing. He was just a boy. I quite understand that. He was a mere boy till today. And then, Daddy, he suddenly changed. All at once, he became a man. It was while he was telling me. Oh, you'll scarcely know him now, Mother.
Darling, he breakfasted with us. I think I shall know him still.
He is quite different from breakfast time. He doesn't laugh anymore. He would never think of capsizing the punt intentionally now. He's grown so grave, so manly, so protective. He thinks of everything now, of freeholds and leaseholds and gravel soil and hot and cold and the hire system.
She cries again, but her eyes are sparkling.
He's got as far as that, has he?
He's waiting down there, Mummy. May I bring him in?
Of course, dearest.
Don't come with him, though.
Oh, you know how shy Simon is.
I do not.
Your father and I must have a talk with him alone, you see.
I suppose so. Would you mind if I go upstairs in the apple room and sometimes knock on the floor? I think it would be a help to him to know I'm so nearby.
It would be a help to all of us, my sweet.
You won't try to turn him against me, Daddy?
I would try my hardest if I thought I had any chance. Poor old mother.
Poor old father. There couldn't be a nicer boy, though.
No. But, well,
yes, there's that.
You got me on the quick when she said you won't try to turn him against me, Daddy, because that is just what I suppose I've got to do.
He must be told.
Fanny, let's keep it to ourselves.
It wouldn't be fair on him.
No, he wouldn't. He will be an ass if it bothers him.
Yes.
And here comes Simon, a manly youth of 23 in a naval uniform. Whether he has changed much since breakfast time, we have no means of determining. But he is sufficiently attractive to make one hope that there will be no further change in the immediate future.
Right. Well,
You will need to say more than that, you know, Simon, to justify your conduct.
Good Simon, how could you?
It almost seems like stealing.
It is stealing.
I know it's hard on you, of course, but if you knew what Mary Rose is...
We feel that even we know to some extent what Mary Rose is.
Yes, of course, and so you can see how it has come about. I would let myself be cut into little chips for her. I should almost like it. Perhaps you have thought I was a rather larky sort in the past.
We see an extraordinary change in you, Simon.
Have you noticed that? Mary Rose had noticed it too. To some young people, marriage is a thing to be entered into lightly. But that's not my style. What I want is to give up larks and all that and ensure my life and read the political articles. Oh, yes, and I promise you it won't be like losing a daughter, but like gaining a son.
Did Mary Rose tell you to say that?
Well, another thing. I should consider it well worth being married to Mary Rose just to have you, Mrs. Morland, for a mother-in-law.
Well said, Simon. I like you the better for that.
Did she tell you to say that also?
Well, at any rate, never shall I forget the respect and affection I owe to the parents of my beloved wife.
She isn't your wife yet, you know.
No, she isn't. But can she be? Mrs. Morland, can she be?
That's as may be, Simon. It's only a possible engagement that we're discussing at present.
Yes, yes, of course. I used to be careless about money, but I've thought of a trick of writing the word economy in the inside of my watch so that I'll see it every time I wind it up. My family...
Oh, we like them, Simon.
I don't know whether you've noticed a sound from up above.
Oh, I did think I heard something.
That is Mary Rose in the apple room.
No.
Yes, she's doing that to help me. I promised I'd knock back as soon as I thought things were going well. What do you say? May I?
I think, Fanny, that he might.
May I stand on this chair?
Not yet. There's a little thing, Simon, that Mary Rose's father and I feel we ought to tell you about her before you knock, my dear.
I won't believe anything against Mary Rose.
We have nothing to tell you against her.
It's just something that happened, Simon. She couldn't help it.
We must have your promise before we tell you that you will keep it to yourself.
My promise?
You must never speak of it, even to her.
Not to Mary Rose. Well, I wish you would say quickly what it is.
Come and sit. It happened 7 years ago, when Mary Rose was 11. We were in a remote part of Scotland, in the Outer Hebrides.
I once went on shore there from the Gadfly. Huh? Very bleak and barren. I never saw a tree.
It is mostly like that. There's a whaling station. We went because I was fond of fishing. I haven't had the heart to fish since. Quite close to the inn where we stayed is a little island.
That island, it's in his head. It's there so clearly, he forgets to go on.
It's quite a small island, Simon, uninhabited, no sheep even. There are trees there, quite a number of them. Scotch firs and a few rowan trees. They have red berries, you know. There seemed to us to be nothing very particular about the island, unless perhaps that it was curiously complete in itself, a sort of miniature land. That was all we noticed, though it became the most dreaded place in the world to us.
I can tell him without you here, Fanny.
I prefer to stay, James.
I fished a great deal in the loch between that island and the larger one. The sea trout were wonderful. I often rowed Mary Rose across to the little island and left her there to sketch. She was fond of sketching in those days. We thought them pretty things. I could see her from the boat most of the time, and we used to wave to each other. Then I would go back for her when I stopped fishing.
I didn't often go with them. We didn't know at the time that the locals had a superstition against landing on the island, and that it was supposed to resent this. In Gaelic, the name of the island translates as the island that likes to be visited. Mary Rose knew nothing of this, and she was very fond of her island. She used to talk to it, calling it her darling, things like that.
Tell me what happened.
It was on our last day. I had landed her on this island, as usual, and in the early evening, I pulled across to take her off. From the boat, I saw her sitting on a stump of a tree that was her favourite seat. And she waved gaily to me and I to her. Then I rowed over, with, of course, my back to her. I had less than 100 yards to go, but, Simon, when I got across, she wasn't there.
You seem so serious about it. She was hiding from me.
She wasn't on the island, Simon.
Oh, no, but...
Don't you think I searched and searched?
All of us. No one in the village went to bed that night. It was then we learned how they feared the island.
There was nothing we didn't try. But she was gone.
I can't... They couldn't... But never mind. Tell me how you found her.
It was the 20th day after she disappeared. 20 days.
Some boat?
There was no boat but mine.
Tell me.
The search had long been given up, but we couldn't leave.
I was wandering one day along the shore of the loch. You can imagine in what state of mind. I stopped and stood looking across the water at the island, and I saw her sitting on the tree trunk, sketching.
Mary Rose.
She waved at me and went on sketching. I waved back at her. I got into the boat and rowed across just as in the old way, except that I sat facing her so I could see her all the time. When I landed, the first thing she said to me was, "Why did you row in that funny way, Dad?" Then I saw at once that she didn't know anything had happened.
How could... Where did she say she'd been?
She didn't know she'd been anywhere, Simon.
She thought I'd just come for her at the usual time.
20 days. You mean she'd been on the island all that time?
We don't know.
But when you told her...
We never told her. She doesn't know.
Surely you...
We had her back again, Simon. That was the great thing. At first, we thought we'd tell her after we got her home, and it was all so inexplicable. We were Well, we were afraid to alarm her, to take the bloom off her. In the end, we decided never to tell her.
You told no one?
Several doctors.
How did they explain it?
They had no explanation for it except that it never took place. You can think that too, if you like.
I don't know what to think. It's had no effect on her at any rate.
None whatever. And you can guess how we used to watch.
Simon, I'm very anxious to be honest with you. I've sometimes thought that our girl is curiously young for her age. As if... You know how just a touch of frost may stop the growth of a plant and yet leave it blooming? It has sometimes seemed to me as if a cold finger had once touched my Mary Rose.
Mrs. Morland?
There's nothing in it.
What you're worrying about is just her innocence, which seems holy to me.
And indeed it is.
If that is...
We have sometimes thought that she had momentary glimpses back into that time. But before we could question her in a cautious way about them, the gates had closed and she remembered nothing. You've never seen her listening, as it were, for some sound that never came?
No.
But at any rate, she has long outgrown those fancies.
It is a little curious she's never told me about that holiday. She tells me everything.
No, that isn't curious. It's just that the island has faded from her memory. I'd be troubled if she began to recall it. Well, Simon, we felt we had to tell you. That's all we know. I'm sure it's all we'll ever know. What are you going to do?
What do you think?
You heard? That means it's all right. You'll see how she'll come tearing down to us.
Oh, dear boy. You'll see how I will go tearing up to her.
I do love Mary Rose, sir.
So do we, Simon. I suppose that made us love her a little more than other daughters I loved. Well, it's dead and done with, and it doesn't disturb me now at all. I hope you won't let it disturb you.
I won't. But I wonder whether I have noticed her listening for a sound.
Not you. We did wisely, didn't we, in not questioning her?
Oh, Lord, yes. The island that likes to be visited. 'Tis a strange name. I say, let's forget all about it. Mary Rose!
Oh. Is your mother crying too?
Yes.
I see I'm going to have an abominable day. If you two don't mind very much being left alone, I think I'll go and sit in the apple room and cry with your mother. Oh. It is close and dark and musty up there. And when we feel we can't stick it any longer, I'll knock on the floor, Simon, as a sign we're coming down.
Mary Rose.
Oh, Simon. You and me.
You and me, that's it. We're us now. Do you like it?
It is so solemn.
You're not frightened, are you? Not of me. Of what?
At it, being married. Oh, Simon, after we're married, you will sometimes let me play, won't you?
Games? Of course. I'll go on playing rugger myself. Lots of married people play games.
I'm glad.
Let's go back to the boathouse. Then they can come down here and be cosy.
Let's. We can stay there till tea time.
It's fresh down there, and I order you to put on a jacket.
Order? Simon, you do say the loveliest things. I'll put it on at once. Simon, I'll tell you a funny thing about me. I may be wrong, but I think I'll sometimes love you to kiss me. And sometimes it will be better not.
All right. Tell me, what were you thinking as you sat up there in the apple room waiting?
Holy things.
About love.
We'll try to be good, won't we, Simon, please?
Of course. Did you think of our wedding day?
A little.
Only a little?
But very clearly. Oh, Simon,
I had such a delicious idea about our honeymoon. There's a place in Scotland, in the Hebrides. I'd love to go there.
The Hebrides?
We once went to it when I was little. Isn't it funny? I'd almost forgotten about that island. And then suddenly, I saw it quite clearly as I was sitting up there.
What made that place so special?
Oh, fishing for Father. But there was an island where I often... My little island.
What are you listening for?
Oh, was I? I don't hear anything. Oh, I should love to show you the tree trunk and the rowan tree where I used to sketch while Father was in the boat. I expect he used to land me on the island because it was such a safe place.
I'm not going to spend my honeymoon by the sea. But I'd like to go to the Hebrides someday to see that island.
Oh, yes. Let's.
So, here we are on that island in the Outer Hebrides. It is fair to look upon today, all its menace hidden under mosses of various hues, like a sulky woman asleep. A miniature land, Mrs. Morland called it. A Neverland. The sun, which has left the bleak hills beyond, is playing hide-and-seek on it. But you have to wonder... with whom? A blessed sport, it might be thought, rather than sinister, were it not for those two trees, a fir and a rowan, their arms outstretched forever southward, as if they had been struck while in full flight and could no longer pray to their gods to carry them away from this island. And here are Mary Rose and Simon, still the gay young creatures of their engagement day. Their talk is the happy nonsense that leaves no ripple unless the unexpected happens.
I think... Oh, I don't think at all. I'm quite sure this is the place. Oh, Simon, kiss me. Kiss me quick. You promised to kiss me quick when we found the place.
I'm not the man to break my word.
Oh.
At the same time, Mary Rose, I would point out that this is the third spot you've picked out as being the place, and I've kissed you quick three times on that understanding. This can't go on, you know. As for your wonderful island, turns out to be about the size of the Round Pond.
The rowan berries! Oh, I used to put them in my hair. Darling rowan tree, are you glad to see me back? You don't look a bit older. How do you think I'm wearing? I shall tell you a secret. You two, fairy, come closer, both of you. Put your arms around me and listen. I am married. Oh! Oh, it didn't like that, Simon. It's jealous. After all, it knew me first. Dearest trees, if I'd known you felt for me in that way. But it's too late now. I've been married for nearly 4 years, and this is the man. Oh!
What is it now?
That moss! Oh, I feel sure there's a tree trunk beneath it, the one on which I used to sit and sketch.
Oh, yep. Yeah. It's a tree trunk, all right.
I think I cut my name into it with a knife.
This looks like it. Yep, M. A, R, and there it stops. That's always where the blade of the knife breaks.
My ownest seat. How I've missed you. You were the one who wanted to come, Simon. I wonder why.
Oh, no particular reason. Just wanted to see a place you'd visited as a child, that was all. But what a trumpery island it proves to be.
How can you? Even if it's true, you didn't say it before them all, hurting their feelings. Deceit
Here is one for each year I've been away. One, two, three, four, five, six.
Go on, give it all the news while I have a lie down.
Nine, ten.
Tell it we don't have a house of our own yet.
Yes, you see, dear seat, we live with my parents because Simon is so often away at sea. But listen, you trees, I have a much more wonderful secret than that. You can have three guesses. Oh, it is this. I have got a baby. He is 2 years and 9 months and, oh, he says such beautiful things to me about loving me. Oh, Rowan, do you think he means them?
I distinctly heard it say yes.
She gazes entranced across the water, from one island to the other.
You needn't pretend you can see him.
I do. Oh, can't you? He's waving his bib at us.
That's Mercy's cap.
And he's waving that. Oh, how clever of him. Hello? Oh, now they're gone. Isn't it funny to think that I used to wave to my father from this very spot? And what's a happy time?
Help me with this fire, you chatterbox.
All right. He's never talked about it.
Forgotten it, probably.
Simon, why did you want to come to my island without me?
Did I? Oh, I thought you seemed a bit tired. Thought you'd be happier at the inn. Wonder where Cameron can have got to.
Here he comes. Look, do be polite to him, darling. You know how touchy they are.
I'm learning.
On a boat by the shore of the island is Cameron, a gawky youth of 20, in the poor but honourable garb of the gillie. He's not especially impressive until you question him about the universe.
Is it the wish of Mr. Bleak that I should land?
Yes, yes, Cameron, with the luncheon.
Is it the wish of Mr. Bleak that I open the basket?
We'll tumble out the lunch. If you bring a trout or two, I want you to show my wife, Cameron, how you cook fish by the water's edge.
With pleasure. I wrap the trouts in newspaper and soak the newspaper parcels in water.
Take the other end of this cloth, Mary Rose.
Sit by me, Simon.
I now place the parcels on the fire, and when the paper begins to burn, it will be a sure sign that the trouts are now ready. Like myself, ma'am, to be your humble servants. If you'll excuse me.
Oh, don't go away.
If it is agreeable to Mistress Blake, I would wish to go back to the boat.
Why? It would be more agreeable to me if you would stay.
I will stay.
Good man. Look after the trout. What was that book you were reading, Cameron, while I was fishing?
It is a small Euripides I carry in my pocket, Mr. Blake.
Latin, Mary Rose?
It may be Latin, but in these parts and at the University of Aberdeen, where I study for the ministry, we know no better than to call it Greek.
Do sit down and have potluck with us, Mr. Cameron.
I thank you, Mr. Blake, but it would not be good manners for a paid man to sit with his employers. And I must attend to the trout. The paper has begun to burn. Here you are, Mistress Blake.
Oh, thank you. Oh, oh, gracious. Hmm. Won't you sit down with us, Mr. Cameron?
I'm doing very well here, thank you.
But please.
I will not sit down on this island.
Superstitious, Cameron. What would they say about that at the manse?
This island has a bad name. I have never landed on it before.
A bad name, Mr. Cameron. Oh, what a shame. When I was here long ago, I often came to this island.
Is that so? It was not a wise thing to do.
It's a darling island.
That is the proper way to speak of it.
I'm sure I've never heard a word against it. Have you, Simon?
No. I've heard that its Gaelic name has an odd meaning. The island that likes to be visited. But there's nothing terrifying in that.
Well, the name is new to me, Mr. Cameron. I think it's sweet.
That's as may be, Mistress Blake.
What do you have against this island?
For one thing, they are saying it has no authority to be here. It was not always here, so they are saying. Then one day, it was here.
That little incident happened before your time, I'd imagine, Mr. Cameron.
It happened before the time of anyone now alive, Mr. Blake.
I thought so. And does the island ever go away on a jaunt in the same way?
There are some who say that it does.
But you have not seen it on the move yourself.
I am not always watching it, Mr. Blake.
Anything else against it?
The birds. Too many birds come here. Birds like this island more than a seemly. It is said they come to listen.
To listen to the silence? This island is as still as an empty church.
I don't know. That is what they say.
I think it's a lovely story about the birds. I expect they come because this island likes to be visited.
That's another thing. An island that has visitors would not need to want to be visited.
But what are people afraid of?
There are stories.
Oh, do tell us. Oh, Simon, wouldn't it be lovely if you would tell us some misty, eerie Highland stories?
But not unless they are pretty ones.
Oh, please, Mr. Cameron. I love to have my blood curdled.
There are many stories. There is the one about the boy who was brought to this island. He was no older than your baby.
What happened to him?
No one knows, Mr. Blake. His father and mother and their friends, they were gathering rowans on the island. And when they looked round, he was gone.
Lost?
He could not be found. He was never found.
Never? Oh, he had fallen into the water.
That is a good thing to say. That he had fallen into the water. That is what I say.
But you don't believe it?
I do not.
What do the people in the village say?
Some say he is on the island still.
Mr. Cameron.
What else do they say?
They say that they are not here always, but that they come and go.
They? Who are they?
I don't know.
Perhaps he heard what the birds come to listen to.
That is what they say. He heard the island calling.
How does the island call?
I don't know.
But if that child heard it, the others must have heard it also, as they were with him.
They heard nothing. This is how it will be. I might be standing close to you, Mistress Blake, as it were, and I might hear it. Very loud, terrible, or in soft whispers. No one knows. But I would have to go, and you will not have heard the sound.
Oh, Simon, isn't it creepy?
But full of holes. How long ago is this supposed to have happened?
It was before I was born.
Before I was born, yes, I thought so.
Oh, Simon, don't make fun of my island. Do you know any more stories about it, Mr. Cameron?
I can't tell them if Mr. Blake will be saying things the island might not like to hear.
All right, Cameron.
This one is about a young English miss. They say she was about 10 years old.
Not so much younger than I was when I came here. How long ago was it?
I think it is 10 years ago this summer.
Simon, must have been the year after I was here.
Very likely, but we must be getting back. Did you bail out the boat?
I did not, but I will do it now, if such is your wish.
The story first. No, I won't go without the story.
Well, then, the father of this miss was fond of fishing. And he sometimes landed the little one on the island while he fished round it from the boat.
Just as Daddy used to do with me.
I imagine lots of bold tourists come over here.
That is so. If ignorance be boldness, and sometimes...
I really think we should set off.
No, dear. No. Please go on, Mr. Cameron.
One day, the father pulled over for his little one, as usual. He saw her from the boat, and it is said she kissed her hand to him. Then in a moment more, he reached the island. But she was gone.
Gone?
My father was one of the searchers. For many days they searched.
But it wouldn't take many minutes to search this darling little island.
They searched, ma'am. Long after there was no sense in searching.
Oh, what a curdling story. Simon, it could have been me. Is there any more?
There is more. It was about a month afterwards. Her father was walking on the shore over there. And he saw something moving on the island. All a tremble, ma'am, he came across in the boat, and it was his little girl.
Alive?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I am glad. But it rather spoils the mystery.
How, Mary Rose?
Because she could tell them what happened, stupid. What had happened?
It's not so easy as that. She didn't know that anything had happened. She thought she had only been parted from her father for an hour.
Give me your hand, darling.
You and your bogies and wraiths, Cameron.
Don't be alarmed, Simon. I was only pretending.
It is not good to disbelieve the stories when you are in these parts. I believe them all when I'm here. though I turn the cold light of reason on them when I am in Aberdeen.
Is that wise? An island that has such extraordinary powers as this could surely send its call to Aberdeen or farther.
I had not thought of that. That may be very true.
Beware, Mr. Cameron, lest someday, when you are preaching far from here, the call plucks you out of the very pulpit and brings you back to the island like a trout on a long cast.
I will go and build the boat.
Imagine it was true, Simon.
But it isn't.
No, of course not. But if it had been, how awful for the girl when her father told her she'd been away for weeks.
Perhaps she was never told. He may have thought it wiser not to disturb her.
Poor girl. Yes, I suppose that would have been best. Oh, little island, I don't think I like you today. You won't let them catch me, will you, Simon?
Let them try. And now, to pack up the remnants of the feast and escape from the scene of the crime. We will never come back again, Mary Rose. I'm too frightened.
It's a shame to be funny about my island. Poor, lonely island. I never knew about your liking to be visited, and now I imagine I'll never visit you anymore. The last time of anything is always sad, don't you think, Simon?
There always has to be a last time.
Yes, I suppose. For everything. There'll be a last time that I see you. Someday I'll flatten that tuft of hair for the 1,000th time and then never do it again.
Someday I'll look for it and it won't be there. That day I'll say good riddance.
And I will cry.
Come here.
Someday, Simon, you will kiss me for the last time.
Well, this won't be the last time at any rate. What is it?
I don't know. Something seemed to pass over me.
You and your last times. Let me tell you, Mistress Blake, there'll also be a last time of you seeing your baby.
Oh.
No, I only mean that he can't always be a baby. But the day after you've seen him for the last time as a baby, you'll see him for the first time as a little gentleman. Oh. Think of that.
The loveliest time of all will be when he's a man and takes me on his knee instead of me putting him on mine. Don't you think the sad thing is that we mostly don't know when the last time has come? We could make so much more of it.
Don't you believe that? To know would spoil it all. I should probably stamp out the fire.
Oh, let Cameron do that. Come and sit next to me, Simon. Put your arm round me. Have I been a nice wife to you, Simon? I don't mean always and always. There was that awful day when I threw the butter dish at you. I'm so sorry. But have I been a tolerably good wife on the whole? I mean, not a wonderful one, but a wife that would pass in a crowd.
Look.
Have I been all right as a mother, Simon? Have I been the sort of mother a child could both love and respect?
You'd have to ask young Harry Morland Blake.
Have I?
Shut up, Mary Rose. I know you. You'll be crying in a moment, and you don't have a handkerchief because I wrapped it round the trout whose head came off.
But say you forgive me about the butter dish.
I'm not sure.
And there were some other things, almost worse than the butter dish.
I often wonder that I didn't take to drink.
Poor old Simon. But how stupid you were, darling, not to understand.
How's a young husband meant to understand that it's a good sign when his wife throws a butter dish
you
at him?
You should have guessed.
I always understood that when a young wife... that then she took her husband aside and went red or white and hid her head on his bosom and whispered the rest. I admit, I was hoping for that, but all I got was a butter dish.
I suppose different women have different ways.
I hope so. As for the trick you played on me afterwards...
Which? Oh, that. I just wanted you to be out of the way till it was all over.
I don't mean sending me to Plymouth. I mean not letting them tell me when I got back that... that he'd arrived.
That was naughty of me. Do you remember? You came into my room and tried to comfort me, saying it wouldn't be long now. Then I let you maunder on.
Gazing at me with solemn, innocent eyes.
You should have been able to read in my face how clever I'd been. Oh, Simon, but I said at last, dearest, what is that funny thing in the cradle? And you went and looked. Oh, I shall never forget your face.
I thought at first it was some baby you'd borrowed.
I still think so sometimes. I didn't, did I?
You're a funny one. Just when I think I know you at last, I have to begin at the beginning again.
Simon, if one of us had to go and we could choose which one...
Oh, she's off again.
Well, but if... I wonder which would be best. I mean, for Harry, of course.
Well, I'd have to hop it.
Oh, darling!
Oh, steady, I haven't popped off yet. You nearly knocked over the pickles. If I did go, I know your first thought would be the happiness of Harry must not be interfered with for a moment. You would blot me out forever, Mary Rose, rather than see him lose one of his 100 laughs a day. It's true, isn't it?
It's true, at any rate, that if I was the one to go, that's what I'd like you to do.
Get off the tablecloth and don't step on the marmalade.
Oh, Simon, isn't life lovely? I'm so happy! Aren't you?
Of course.
Oh, Simon, leave the marmalade. Why don't you scream with happiness? Right, one of us has got to scream.
Then I know which one it will be. Scream away. It'll make Cameron jump.
Hello!
There you are, Cameron. We're still safe, you see. You can count us. Two.
I am very glad.
Here's the basket. You needn't tie the boat up. Stay there and I'll stamp out the fire myself.
As Mr. Blake pleases.
Ready, Mary Rose?
I must say goodbye to my island first. Goodbye, old mossy seat. Nice rowing. Goodbye, little island that likes too much to be visited. Perhaps I'll come back when I'm an old lady with wrinkles and you won't know me.
Darling, do shut up. I can't help listening to you and I should be getting this fire out.
I won't say another word.
Just as it seems to be out, the sparks come back. Do you think if I get some stones...
Don't ask me. I promise not to say anything.
Simon is busy dumping wet stones from the loch onto the fire. His back to Mary Rose. Cameron is in his boat with his Euripides. Mary Rose sits demure but gay, holding her tongue with her fingers like a child. Something else is happening. Can you hear it? The call has come to Mary Rose. It is at first as soft and furtive as whisperings from holes in the ground. Mary Rose, Mary Rose. Then in a fury as of storm and whistling winds that might be an unholy organ, it rushes upon the island, raking every bush for her. The horrid voices are not without an opponent. Struggling through them and also calling her name, there is music of an unearthly sweetness that is seeking perhaps to beat back the darkness and put a girdle of safety around her. Look! Mary Rose's arms once go out to her husband for help, but thereafter she is oblivious of his existence. Her face is rapt, but there is neither fear nor joy in it. Thus, she passes from view. The island immediately resumes its stillness. The sun has gone down. Simon with his back to her by the fire and Cameron in the boat have heard nothing.
I think the fire's finally out. We can go now. It's got really cold and grey, hasn't it? You needn't grip your tongue any longer, you know. Ah. Mary Rose, where have you got to? Please don't hide. Dearest, don't. Cameron, where's my wife?
Cameron rises in the boat, but he's afraid to land.
Mary Rose!
His face scares Simon.
Mary Rose! Cameron, I can't find her. Mary Rose! Mary Rose! Mary Rose!
And so we leave the island. Though to be born is to be wrecked on an island, so I wonder if we can ever really leave. We're back in the cosy room of the Morlands house as the years flicker past it. It's a crisp autumn afternoon just before twilight. The low sun making shadows that play around that little door at the back. You can hear a clock ticking, like that in the belly of a crocodile. The apple tree has become smaller, but there are a few garret apples on it. The fire is burning. As ever, the clergyman has visited. As ever, he has quarrelled with Mr. Morland about a print. As ever, Mrs. Morland has kept the peace.
He's a good fellow, George, but he's so touchy about his age. And he has a way of tottering off to sleep while you're talking to him.
He's not the only one of us who does that.
Yeah. What are you thinking about?
I was thinking about the apple tree.
Oh, it must come down. It's becoming a danger. It might fall on someone down there any day.
I quite see it has to go, but her tree. She used to use it as a ladder from this room to the ground.
She can speak of Mary Rose without a tremor now. He doesn't ask who she means, but he nearly does.
Yes, of course. Did she used to climb the apple tree? Yes, yes, I think she did.
Had you forgotten that, James?
I'm afraid I forget a lot of things.
Just as well.
It's so long since...
25 years. A third of our lifetime. Oh, it'll soon be dark. I can see twilight running across the fields. Draw the curtains, dear. Simon's train must be nearly due.
Oh, yes. 10 minutes or so. Did you forward his telegram?
No, I thought he'd probably get it sooner if I kept it here.
Oh, yeah, you're probably right. Yeah.
What's wrong?
I'm afraid I was rather thoughtless about the apple tree. I hurt you.
Oh, such nonsense. Have another pipe, James.
I will not have another pipe. I hereby undertake to give up smoking for a week as a punishment to myself.
You'll regret this, you know.
Why is my heart not broken? If I was a man of real feeling, it would have broken 25 years ago, just as yours did.
No, it didn't.
In a way, it did. As for me, at the time I thought I could never raise my head again, but now I ride and shoot and laugh and give pompous decisions on the bench and wrangle with old George as if nothing much had happened to me. I never think of the island now. I dare say I could go back and fish. Do you know, I've actually been considering, Fanny, whether I should get another dress suit.
And why shouldn't you?
Oh, at my age. This should be put on my tombstone. In spite of some adversity, he remained a lively old blade to the end.
Perhaps that would be a rather creditable epitaph for any man who's been through as much as you have. Here you go. I've filled it for you. Open your mouth.
If I smoke, Fanny, I'll despise myself more than ever.
To please me?
Well, I don't feel easy about it. Not easy at all. At any rate, I won't get the dress suit.
Your dress suit is shining like a mirror.
I know. I thought of a jacket suit only. The V-shaped waistcoat seems to be what they're all wearing now.
Would you have braid on the trousers?
Well, I was wondering about that. Oh, Fanny, you're just humouring me.
Not at all. Our trip to Switzerland 2 years ago with Simon, I enjoyed every hour of it. The little card parties here. Think of the girls I've chaperoned and teased and laughed with, just as if I had never had a girl myself. I suppose it is all to the good that as the years go by, the dead should recede farther from us.
Some say they don't.
You and I know better, James.
Up there in the misty Hebrides, I expect they think of her as on the island still. How long is it? How long since you half thought that yourself?
Ever so many years. Perhaps not the first year. I did cling for a time.
Well, her first disappearance.
It's all so unfathomable. It's as if Mary Rose was just something beautiful that you and I and Simon dreamt together. You've forgotten things, but so have I. Even that room.
She looks towards the little door, the little haunted door.
That was hers and the baby's for all that time. And I often go into it now without remembering it was theirs.
It is strange. It is terrible. You are nearly forgotten, Mary Rose.
Oh, that's not true. Mary Rose belongs to the past and we have to live in the present, at least for a little longer. Then perhaps we shall understand it all.
Do you think Simon is a philosopher about it too?
Simon was very fond of her.
Was. Is it all was about Mary Rose?
It just has to be. He had all those people advising, suggesting, probing. He went back to the island every year for a long time.
Yes. And then he missed a year and that somehow ended it.
He never married again, and most men would.
His work took her place. What a jolly, hearty fellow he is.
If you mean he isn't heartbroken, he isn't. The wound healed. Good.
I'm not criticising Fanny. I suppose anyone who came back after 25 years, however much they'd been loved, it might... Would we know what to say to them, Fanny?
Dr. James. Oh, Simon is late, isn't he?
Oh, a little. I heard the train a short time ago, and he might be here just if he managed to find a cab. Not if he's walking across the fields.
Simon!
Simon looks his years in greatcoat and mufti. He has grizzled grey hair, not very much of it, and the tuft has gone. He's heavier and more commanding than he was, full of vigour, a rollicking sea dog for the moment, but it's a face that could be stern to the point of harshness.
Come aboard, sir. Mother!
Put me down. You know how I hate to be rumpled.
Oh, she loves it. Always did. Get that coat off, Simon. Here, put it anywhere. Here.
Your hands are so cold. Come closer to the fire.
He's looking fit, though. We need to be these days.
So nice to have you here again. You do like duck, don't you? The train was late, wasn't it?
A few minutes only. I made a selfish bolt for the one cab and got it.
We thought you might be walking across the fields.
No, I left the fields to the two other people who got out of the train. One of them was a woman.
Bertha Collington, I expect. She was in London today.
If I thought it was Mrs. Collington, I would have offered her a lift. Something about her walk was familiar, but it was darkish and I couldn't make her out.
Just for a moment, he gleams boyishly, like the young husband he used to be.
Mother, I have news. I've got the Bellerophon.
Oh, bravo, Simon.
What I wanted most of all, I feel so lucky.
Beastly life for sailors.
Beastly, but I wouldn't exchange it. And if this war does come...
Oh, it won't, I'm sure.
Of course. But they say... However...
Oh, Simon, I'd forgotten. There's a telegram for you.
As long as it's not recalling me, I had hope for at least 5 clear days.
We didn't open it.
2-1 it's recalling me.
It came 2 days ago. I don't like them, Simon. I never did.
It may be from Harry at last. Mother, do you think I was sometimes a bit harsh on him?
Open it, Simon.
So he opens the telegram. Many unseen devils steal into the room. Just look at his face.
It can't be as bad as that. We're all here, Simon.
But for a moment, he has not been here himself. He has been on an island.
Here, James.
He's a good son. A better son than he was a father, I think.
Sit down, Mother.
He places Mrs. Morland on the sofa.
Sit.
Kneels beside her, strokes her face. She reaches out to her husband.
Can't be. Can't be.
It's all right, Mother. Don't be afraid. It's good news.
You've come through so much. You can be brave for another minute, can't you? Mother, it's Mary Rose.
It can't be true. It's too glorious to be true. Glorious? Is my Mary Rose alive?
It's all right. It's all right. I wouldn't say it if it wasn't true. The telegram... It's from Cameron. You remember who he was? His minister there now. Hold my hand. Hold my hand and I'll read it. James. Your wife has come back. She was found today on the island. I'm bringing her to you. She is quite well. But you will all have to be very careful.
Simon.
I believe it. Cameron would not deceive me.
Well, he might be deceived himself.
He knew her by sight as well as any of us.
But after 25 years...
Do you think I wouldn't know her after 25 years?
She will be very changed.
However changed. Mother, wouldn't I know her at once? Her hair might be as grey as mine. Her face. That little figure. But though they were all gone, don't you think I'd know my Mary Rose at once? Oh, my God. I saw her. And I didn't know her.
Simon.
It was Cameron. With her. They must have been on my train. Mother, it was her I saw going across the fields. A little walk when she was excited, half a run. I recognized it, but I didn't remember it was hers.
How those unseen devils chuckle.
It was getting dark.
Mary Rose is coming across the fields.
It's rather dark. I wouldn't be surprised if we had a touch of frost tonight. I wish I was more use.
Mr. Cameron, is it true?
It's true, Mum. Mr. Blake is with her now. You must be prepared to find her different.
We're all different.
I mean, Mrs. Morland, different from what you expect. She is not different as we are different. They will be saying she is just as she was on the day she went away. These 25 years, she will be thinking they were just an hour in which Mr. Blake and I left in some incomprehensible jest.
Just like...
But when you told her the truth...
She will not have it.
She must have seen how much older you are.
She does not know me, ma'am, as the boy who was with her that day. When she did not recognise me, I thought it best. She was so troubled already not to tell her.
But now that she has seen Simon...
I'm not sure. It is dark out there.
She must have known that he would never have left her and come home.
That secretly troubles her. But she won't speak of it. There is some terrible dread lying on her heart.
A dread?
Harry. Oh, James, what if she thinks Harry is still a child?
I never heard what became of the boy.
He ran away to sea when he was 12 years old. We had a few letters from Australia, just a few. We don't know where he is now.
How was she found, Mr. Cameron?
Two men, fishing from a boat sore. She was asleep by the shore at the very spot where Mr. Blake made that fire. There was a rowan tree beside it. At first, they were afraid to land, but they did. They said there was such a joy in her face as she slept that it was a shame to wake her.
Joy?
That is so, sir. I've sometimes thought...
Hear that gleeful clattering. Mary Rose. She looks just as when we last saw her, except that somehow we cannot see her quite so clearly. She leaps towards her mother in the old, impulsive way, and yet something steps between them.
What is it?
It is the years.
My lovely one.
Mary Rose.
Father.
And yet the obstacle is still there. So she turns back to Simon.
What is it, Simon?
Now in the cheery light of the drawing room, she looks at him properly and shakes.
Come here, Mary Rose.
Oh, Mary Rose.
Mary Rose is glad to be in their arms, but she's not thinking about them, but of someone else.
We are so glad you had a comfortable journey, Mary Rose. You would like a cup of tea, wouldn't you? Is there anything I can do?
She tries to look at him, but her eyes slide towards the little door.
Tell me.
Tell you what, my darling?
You.
Cameron takes her hand, but then turns away.
Oh, Simon, my darling Simon. Be nice to me, Simon. Be nice to me, darling Simon, and tell me.
Dearest love, since I lost you, it was a long time ago.
It wasn't. Please, it wasn't. Tell me, Mother. Please tell me.
I don't know what she wants to be told.
I know.
There is my baby.
They cannot face her. So she goes to seek the answer from that room that lies beyond that little door, the haunted door. Her mother and her husband follow her.
Have you been in this part of the country before, Mr. Cameron?
I have not, sir. It is my first visit to England.
Oh?
You cannot hear the sea in this house at all, which is very strange to me.
If I might show you our downs.
I thank you, Mr. Morland, but in such circumstances, do not trouble about me at all.
All the while they listen and imagine what is going on in that inner room beyond that little door, the haunted door.
I do not know if you are interested in prints. I have a pencil sketch by my cousins. It's undoubtedly genuine.
This matter. So strange, so inexplicable.
Please don't talk of it to me, sir. I am an old man. I've been so occupied all my life with little things. Very pleasant. I cannot cope. I cannot cope.
Mr. Morland.
Do you think she should have come back, Mr. Cameron?
And on that question, darkness falls. Into this darkness, Mrs. Ottery enters with a candle and a cup of tea. The room is back to its dismantled state. No peacock, no apple tree.
Here's your tea. Are you sitting in the dark? I was just...
She stops short, struck by his appearance. She holds the candle nearer. He is staring wide-eyed into the fire, motionless.
What's the matter? Here's your tea. If you don't want it, I'll take it away again.
Why? Give me the tea. That's better. Thank you.
Have you seen something?
I saw everything so clear that I don't know what to think. Tell me about this... ghost.
It's no concern of yours.
Yes, it is some concern of mine. The people who used to live here, the Morlands, they were my family a long time ago. Tell me about them.
I don't know much. They were dead and gone before my time, the old man and his wife.
It's not them I'm asking you about.
They had a son-in-law, a sailor. The war made a great man of him before it drowned him.
I know that. He was my father. I used to think him hard. I know better now. Gone. There's the other one.
That was all?
There is one more.
If you must speak of her, she is dead too. I never saw her in life.
Where is she buried?
Down by the church.
Is there a stone?
Yes.
Does it say her age?
No.
Is it well taken care of?
You can see for yourself.
I will see for myself. And so it's her ghost that haunts this house. There's no such thing as ghosts.
When I came in, your eyes were staring. I thought you had seen her.
Have you ever seen her yourself? Where?
She looks towards the little door, the haunted door.
In there? Has she ever been seen out of that room?
All over the house, in every room.
What is she like?
She looks just like you or me. But for all that, she's as light as air. Oh, I've seen things.
You look like it too. But she's harmless.
There's some wouldn't say that. If she thought you were keeping it from her, she'd do you a mischief.
Keeping what from her?
Whatever it is she prowls about this cold house searching for. I don't know what it is.
Maybe I could tell you. I could probably put her in the way of finding him.
Then I wish to God you would, and let her rest.
There are worse things than not finding what you're looking for. It's finding them so different from what you'd hoped. I'm going into that room.
Do what you want.
I'll burst open that door.
No need. It's not locked.
But I tried it and it wouldn't open. You think she's in there?
She may be.
I need some air.
The sky is full of stars.
Leave me here.
I don't know. You think you're in no danger,
please, but... leave.
Watch him. For a moment he is still, and then he sets off on his quest. He carries the candle, which takes with it all the light of the room. You can see him on the other side of the darkness, in the little passage, and then he is finally through the door beyond. Nothing. No sound. Breath held. So he comes back, and there in the middle of the room is a pale figure as if made out of the light he has brought back with him.
Have you come to buy the house?
Not me.
It's a very nice house, isn't it?
It was a nice house. Once.
Wasn't it? Did you know this house?
When I was little.
How little? Was it you who laughed?
When was that?
There was once someone who laughed in this house. Don't you think laughter is a very pretty sound?
I never really thought about it.
You're quite old.
I'm getting on.
Do you mind telling me why everyone is so old? I don't know you, do I?
I wonder. Take a look. You might have seen me in the old days. Playing about outside in the garden. Or even inside.
You're not Simon, are you?
No. My name is Harry.
I don't think so. No, I strongly object to you saying that.
I'm an odd sort of bloke. And I would like to hear you call me Harry.
I decline. I'm sorry, but I absolutely decline.
No offence.
I think you're sorry for me.
I am.
I'm sorry for me too.
If only it was something I don't know anything about ghosts. Not a thing. Can they sit down? Could you...
That's your chair.
What do you mean by that?
That's where you were sitting.
Were you in this room when I was sitting there?
I came in to look at you.
A sudden thought makes him cross with the candle to where he had left his knife. It is gone.
Where's my knife? Were you standing looking at me with my knife in your hand? Give me the knife.
Here.
What made you take it?
I thought you were perhaps the one.
The one?
The one who stole him from me.
I see. In a sort of way, I suppose I am. If you're not going to sit, I will.
Give him back to me.
I wish I could. But I doubt he's gone beyond recall.
Who is he?
Do you mean you've forgotten who you're searching for?
I knew once. Such a long time ago. Tired. Please, can I go away and play now?
Go away? Where? You mean back to that place? What sort of a place is it? Is it good to be there?
Lovely. Lovely, lovely.
It's not just an island, is it? It's so
Lovely, lovely. Have you forgotten the island, too?
I'm sorry?
The island. The place where you heard the call.
What is that?
As far as I can make out, it was as if, in a way, there were two kinds of dogs hunting you. The good and the bad.
Please, don't be cross with
me. I'm not cross with you. I'm beginning to think it was the good dogs that got you. But if that place is so lovely, what made you leave it?
I don't know.
Do you think you could have fallen out?
I don't know. Please, I don't want to be a ghost anymore.
Come to me, little ghost. I wish you would.
Certainly not.
If you come, I'll try and help you. Sit on my knee. There you go. When I was sitting by the fire alone, I seemed to hear you as you once were saying that someday when he was a man, he would like to sit on your Harry's knee.
Loveliest time of all will be when he is a man and takes me on his knee instead of me taking him on mine.
Do you see who I am now?
Nice man.
Is that all you know about me?
Yes.
There is a name I'd like to call you by, but I think it would worry you. Is it lonely, being a ghost?
Yes.
I can understand that. And now would you like to go away and play?
Please.
In this cold house, when you should be searching, do you sometimes play by yourself instead?
Don't tell.
Not me. You're a pretty thing. What beautiful shoes you have.
Nice buckles.
I like your hair.
Pretty hair.
Do you remember that tuft that used to stand up at the back of Simon's head?
Naughty tuft.
I have one just like that. Just here.
Oh, dear. What a naughty tuft.
My name is Harry.
Harry. Harry. Harry.
But you don't know what Harry I am.
No.
And this brings us no nearer what's to be done with you. I'd willingly stay here, but you're a ghost. They say there are ways of laying ghosts, but I don't know what they are.
Tell me.
I wish I could.
Tell me.
Ghosts are meant to be unhappy because they can't find something. And then once they've got the thing they want, they go away happy and never come back.
Oh, nice.
As far as I can see, you've got that thing at last. But you're too dog-tired to know or care. What you need now is to get back to the place you say is lovely, lovely.
Yes, yes.
If only I could get you there.
Tell me.
It's as if you've been forgotten. As if nobody wanted you, either here or there.
Yes. Bad man.
It's easy to call me names. But there is nothing I wouldn't do for you. I wonder if what it means is that you broke some law just to come back for the sake of that Harry. If it was that, it's surely time it was overlooked.
Yes.
What a night of stars. I bet they know.
Harry hears nothing, but we can. It is the call, but there is no unholy sound in it now. It is a celestial music that calls for Mary Rose. Mary Rose, first in whispers, and soon so loudly that for one who can hear, it is the only sound in the world. Mary Rose, Mary Rose. Harry sees her face is shining. Her hands reach out towards the starlight. And with my hands, even with my sinister hand, I let her go. I let her walk out through the window into the Empyrean.
In Mary Rose by J.M. Barrie. Barrie was played by Bill Patterson. Mary Rose was Bryony Hannah and Simon Oliver Criss. Mr. Morland was James Fleet and Mrs. Morland Pippa Haywood. Cameron was played by Mark Prendergast, Mrs. Ottery by Alison Belbin, and Harry by Finlay Robertson. The music was composed and performed by Laura Moody. Mary Rose was adapted and directed by Abigail Le Fleming.
And you can find more editions of Drama on 3 on the Radio 3 website.
Listen, sleds rushing past in a row, their tiny bells ringing, their easy silvery peal falls on our ears like ambrosia.
Hear the howling warning bell, the very groaning bronze of hell.
Rachmaninoff poured his love of bells into a choral symphony, setting the poetry of Edgar Allan Poe. The BBC Symphony Orchestra and Chorus under Semyon Bychkov perform the bells alongside Tchaikovsky's Sixth and Final Symphony. Next Friday evening at 7:30, live on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3, and it's time now for this week's edition of Early Music Late. It's introduced by Ellen Manahan-Thomas.
Hello and welcome to Early Music Late, our weekly dip into the best of Baroque music making from around Europe. Tonight our concert comes from Belgium and the Wallonie Festival, but the music will transport us to 18th century Germany. The focus is Dresden, as a pearl of Baroque Eastern Germany at its pinnacle, and the programme will feature the foremost composers of the Dresden court. Our performers tonight are the Czech consort L'Ensemble Inégal, with their co-founders Gabriela Ibanova and Adam Viktora as soprano soloist and director. And they open the concert for us now with a piece by Johann David Heinichen, who brought a Venetian touch to the Dresden court during his time as Kapellmeister. Here is his concerto in G for recorder, oboe and strings.